Welcome to Beating Around the Bush, a podcast produced by the Rural Business Collective.
I'm sitting here with Kylie Stretton, who has a multifaceted operation outside Charters Towers in Queensland. Kylie, you've got cattle, you've branched out into poultry recently. So let's start at the beginning. How did you and your husband Shane end up out here at Clancellar Downs?
Shane and I have always kind of had big dreams. We wanted it at our own place and all that, but you know, we've had to start from scratch and build up from there. So we bought Clancellar in July 2012. And since then, you know, we've had cattle on a gistment and that, but because it's such a little block, it's only 100 acres, and at Charters Towers, that's tiny. Our average carrying capacity for the year for cattle should be 5 head on the place per year, so that's not really going to help us a great deal and build our numbers. So we had to really see how we could make the soil work better, how we could make, you know, get better ground cover, better grass coverage, and build our numbers up like that. So we've been trialling different methods of grazing. We've brought the chooks in to do that, and we're making this little tiny block out in the goldfields country of Charters Towers pack a really big punch for its size.
We'll come back to the chooks, because that's a very interesting part of where you're headed. But I guess, you know, you got here and there wasn't too much, but your background is cattle, is that right? How did you first come to be here?
Yeah, we both, you know, love our cattle, love our beef. Shane's from a smaller beef property down near Mergan, near Kingaroy. I've obviously come from around Charters Towers, and that. So we've settled here. Shane's a livestock agent, and we own our own livestock agency, but we work under Landmark so that they deal with all the big money, because we can turn over quite a bit of money, and I don't want that going through my bank accounts. And that is just, I didn't feel I could, you know, do the best by our clients and that. So we let Landmark deal with that, but we pretty much run our own business. So we can go back to 2011 was when we started up Northern Livestock Services. We had been working for a larger agency, but we felt that they couldn't give us the pay that we deserved, and we really wanted to get cracking on our own dreams. So we decided to take this big leap of faith and start up our own agency. This was at the beginning of 2011, so we walked away from this other livestock company with $5,000 in the bank. We rented a house and we had 5 head of cattle. That was all we had, but we thought, you know, it's now or never. We've got to do something. So we did that big step, and we were starting to really find our feet. 2011, we had Cyclone Yasi at the beginning of the year. You know, we'd had pretty decent wet seasons, and then prices were starting to get really good. So for those first few months, it was really, you know, it looked like we'd made the right decision. Everything was going great. And then bring on May 2011 with the live export suspension, and that wiped our business pretty much out for 2 months. We were running at a loss within our first 6 months of having a business. So that was a massive, massive test. And Shane was already thinking, well, do I need to go to the mines? We were taking on whatever work. So he was putting in tenders for fencing contracts. We were just whatever we could do to keep the money rolling in. Things started to pick up a little bit. We saved enough money together to put a deposit on Clancellar Downs. The name comes from the kids, Clancy and Ella Beth, so it's a bit of a tribute to them. So it was a little 100 acres. It had barely anything on it. It had a little two-room shed. It was a mess. There was no internal fencing. There was no troughs. There was no sheds. The house itself was quite messy and run down and dirty, so there was a big road to clean that up. We kind of got our feet a bit, but then the beef crisis of 2012 hit, and again we were down to we had $1,000 left on our overdraft, and that was it. We didn't know what we were going to do, how we were going to cope. And that was a really trying time for the livestock agency business as well, because Shane was actually really busy. There were a lot of cattle moving because the drought was starting to hit. So he was never home, and he was literally exhausted. But because cattle were worth so little, his commission was only minimal. And he had a reputation, because by this time the boats were starting to come back in, but you know, you had to be in quick to get cattle on the boats. And Shane had a reputation of getting cattle on the boats when no one else could. So we were having people ring us at 5 a.m. in the morning. The phones would start at 5 and they wouldn't stop until 10. Of just graziers begging Shane, can you help me? People we hadn't spoken to for 10 years or had never dealt with before. And that took a really big toll on us as well, because they were desperate and we could feel their desperation and, you know, the compassion and the empathy that we were having to deal out to these people while being so damn scared ourselves. It was certainly a very tiring time and a tough time for us. But, you know, we got through that, and by this stage we were starting to build our own numbers and doing a lot of work on Clancella, because when we bought it, it was the landscape had been very degraded. It was very dry. It had, you know, very little grass, ground cover, very little grass, and not a great biodiversity. And that, so we were trying to build our own numbers but look after our environment at all, you know, through all of that. And so we were trialling different grazing methods and we were starting to get there. But the day we actually signed the contract on Clancella in July 2012 was the last day it rained properly. We got 6 inches that day.
You know, you've just gone through the most extraordinary, you know, series of events, and a lot of it, you know, the ups and downs, and not just you, but other people around you. How do you keep picking yourself up from that and, you know, remaining focused on the fact that you wanted to graze your own cattle and that's the end game?
We thought we have 100 acres. We were having cattle on adjustment, but it wasn't, you know, because it was so dry, that was hard to find. We were getting kicked off adjustment and all of that. So by this stage, we'd brought our 500 head up to about 300 head of cattle throughout everything. And so we were looking at different ways of managing our land at Clancella. How can we make a 100-acre block that should only carry 5 head throughout the year? How can we make this work better for us? So what Clancella is now, it's like a depot for our cattle. So all our weaners come back from adjustment and they come here to get educated and that. So we could have 80 head of weaners here at a time. Plus we buy and sell cattle as we're trading, because until recently we actually bought another block down at Garoo and it had hay and irrigated pasture. So it was 150 acres down there, but because of the irrigation it could actually run 250 head. So it was very intensive. So we had a lot of cattle moving and a lot of places. We had hay being baled all the time. So Shane would often get home at 1 o'clock in the morning with a load of hay on, and then we'd be up first thing in the morning unloading it to go again. So I think that to deal with all like the tough times we were just talking about, we just didn't have time to stop and think. And I think because we'd hit rock bottom twice within 18 months that we have been that scared to stop. We don't want to get back there again. So I'm very pedantic about what savings I have up my sleeve. And, you know, we're not allowed to do anything until I have a threshold of, like, just cold hard cash, because we've nearly lost everything twice within, you know, 18 months. So didn't want to go back there again.
No, it's amazing how that is a motivator more than anything else.
Poverty is the best motivator.
Yeah. Now you've moved into a completely different industry. How does that, with your chooks, what are you doing? What are you doing with your chooks?
We were doing a course about holistic grazing, and while Shane and I don't follow that, you know, wholly and solely, we take cherry pick bits of info from different methods of grazing. And somebody was talking about the chooks, and it's quite funny that a couple of years ago I was talking to a friend from down at Wagga Wagga, and he was saying, you know, pastured hens and eggs and poultry are great. And I said to him, and I have to eat my hat, I said, that'll never be done in North Queensland. Our places are too big, our predators, you know, the eagles, the foxes, the country's too dry, it'll never work up here. And so, yeah, that was, I think, 3 years ago. So I came up with this idea. I'd been hearing of other people and how it promoted the soil health, how the nitrogen in the chook poo was fantastic, how they broke down that top layer of soil by scratching, and, you know, they scratch up the compost and all of these things. There's so many different aspects of having hens on your soil. And I started thinking 18 months ago, I want to do this. And I thought, I was thinking about it for about a month, and I'm going, how do I approach Shane with this one? Like, how do I say this is what I want to do? And he said to me one day, he goes, you know, we should really get some chooks and put them out the paddock. And I'm like, yes. And
yes, darling, that was your idea too.
Yes. So I'm like, yeah, I know. I'd really, really like to. So it's taken 18 months just because we have so much going on to build it up and to get it happening. And it is really quite in depth because of all the Safe Food Queensland accreditation I have to go through, and And being the first person in a region like I'm in, like all other poultry producers who have their hens on pasture, they live in a much wetter, colder climate with much better pasture for them. And so it's kind of a little bit by being like a pioneer. Yeah. And, you know, the heat and all that's going to be a huge issue to face in summer. But, yeah, I'm already, you know, talking to people, how am I going to handle them in the heat and that. So, yeah, that's how that came about. And I think the other thing is too, I wanted something for myself. Everything we have done has been Shane's dream. He was always wanted to be an agent, although he wants to move away from that. He's really wanted the bigger place, even though I'm happy to do that. He's certainly the driving one. So I've been with Shane since I was 17 and a half. So my whole adult life has centred around him, and I have been financially dependent on him pretty much all my life. Even though everything we do is a partnership, he is still the one that goes out and earns the money, even though I back him up the whole way. So the hens were something I could handle because I am scared of cattle, but the hens are an animal that I can handle. And I've always been told, eat something, grow something, farm something that you like to eat, and I do love my eggs. So that was kind of the deciding factor. It was all these little things that just made it seem like a good idea.
What I find interesting with that, you know, generally when people go into to free-range eggs and then that sort of thing, the sort of the eggs are the main focus. For you, it seems like the soil health and that side of things is the primary concern. Yeah. And eggs happen to be the byproduct. So it seems like an interesting sort of turn of the
Yeah, head. It is backwards. And because I personally don't have a problem with caged eggs, with barn eggs or anything like that, I just think in Australia we're really lucky as both producers and consumers. We have all these systems that, you know, we can choose to suit our own individual needs, whether they be financial, you know, our values and our nutritional needs. So I think we're lucky in that regard. But yes, it was mostly for the soil health. It was, how can we run more cattle on Clent Cellar? Well, let's bring in the chooks. Let's bring in another animal. I wonder if Shane will agree to pasture pigs anytime soon.
Just to talk about, you know, you've bought the chooks. Tell me about the process. So you obviously, I think you've bought in a caravan, a mover, caravan. So let's talk about the actual setup of what you've done.
Yeah, it is a proper chicken caravan. That is what it's called. That's the brand name, is Chicken Caravan. Chicken Caravan make several sizes of caravans for four hens. So I got the smallest one. It's just 30 because, you know, like I said, it is a very new concept in this region. I didn't want to go and get 200 chooks if it wasn't going to work. So we thought, let's start at 30. Let's see how we go. So we've got the little chicken caravan, and then the girls are surrounded by electric netting just to keep the dingoes and foxes and all that away from them, and just to keep them closer so they don't get lost in the long grass and that as well. They kept in that during the day, but come about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I actually go down now and let them out of that electric netting. It just keeps them occupied. They get to better pasture and all that. And then once a week, that the caravan and the netting is moved at least once a week so that they're always going on to fresh pasture. And, you know, I always try and set the caravan up on a bare patch of dirt. So it's not just putting the caravan anywhere in the paddock. I've got to pick a place that's got the bare dirt for the caravan to sit on, because obviously all the poo falls through the mesh floor. So that's fertilising that piece of soil that's got poor health. But it also needs to have that little area that they're in, also needs to have lots of grass and all that for them to get in. So it's a bit hard to pick and choose. So they're in that during the day. The caravan's got automatic doors on it, so at night I set it to shut at 7, and so they all go into their beds. That's their safe place. They know where to go, and then at 7 o'clock the door shuts, and that keeps them safe. And I really like it because it's just, I don't have to get down, even though I do go down there and lock the electric netting back up, so when the door automatically opens again at 5 a.m. in the morning, they're safe. Mm-hmm. They're kept safe at all times. So
that's amazing, because I can remember as a child going down at 7 o'clock to shut the chook pen was terrifying. So an automatic door would have been terrific.
Yeah.
Are you following Rural Business Collective online? Stay in the loop on all the latest tips and tricks for running a rural business by following us on Facebook. Or for more information on membership, visit the website at ruralbusinesscollective.com.au.
I guess, so, you know, you're talking about soil health. That to me sounds quite broad scale. You've got the 30 chooks now. So How long is it going to take you to improve the soil that you want to take, you want to improve, or does it mean that you're going to have to, you know, increase your numbers to get a bit more done?
The 30 hens, they don't make a great deal of impact, but they probably make a bigger impact than what we realise, because they get in there with all the weeds and the grass, and they lay the grass over, and that they poo on it, they scratch it, and that's just forming a new layer of topsoil. But yes, because there's only a few, it's going to take a while to get around 100 acres. So I think I've had the hens for Easter, since Easter, and we've probably done about 10 acres with them. So, you know, it's not too bad. And because I do move them so frequently, because they're like the cattle, they let me know when they've gotten all the goodness out of the pasture they're on. I can tell when they want to move, and I want to keep them moving, because obviously that's better for their health as well. Mm-hmm. So it is a big juggle between having a positive impact on the environment, but looking after your animal welfare at the same time.
All right, so that's the chooks, and you know, we understand how the rest of that works. But I guess, you know, the big thing for you too is you are selling these eggs now. So what's that process like, going through, you know, food accreditation, marketing? Like, there just seems to be a lot of skills that all of a sudden you need to have.
The biggest thing is that to sell eggs in Queensland, and I think in Australia wide, but Queensland's actually very quite strict, because eggs are a very high-risk food for food poisoning. They do have one of the highest incidents of reported food poisoning cases. So if I wanted to sell my eggs, and there's heaps of people who do supply them illegally, but I could not have that on my conscience. And also because I do a lot of marketing around Clancellor Downs, you know, around the beef industry, I thought it's not something I can slide under the radar in, and I didn't want to. So I had to be accredited to sell my eggs. And if I'm going to have 30 hens, I want to be, you know, able to sell their eggs to get some sort of financial benefit as well as the soil health. So I had to make like an egg packing facility, so which is called our egg shed. And I trawled Facebook sites and the internet for quite a few months trying to find a cold room off the back of the truck. It didn't need to be working, the fridge didn't need to be working, but you know, it was cool, it was going to be vermin proof and all of that. So I got one from Brisbane, and a local company brought it back up for me on a back run. On their tilt truck. So it's sitting out there. Then I had to get some builders in to put a flooring in, so I needed obviously a floor that I could clean easily. I needed to get electricians in. It needed to have a hand washing facility plus a washing up facility. This was all Safe Food Queensland's requirements. I had to get water testing done on my boar to make sure that I didn't have any pathogens in my boar water that could be transferred to the hens or the eggs and then my customers. So I have to go through that every year. And then I had to fill out a huge, I think it was a 8-page application for accreditation with Safe Food Queensland. So I had to do all of that before I got started. And then once I got that application through, I could start selling my eggs. So the process with the eggs are, and their little chicken caravan's very cool, they have roll-away nesting boxes. So as soon as the egg is laid, it rolls away from the hen and they can't access it, so they can't sit on it, so it doesn't get hot, it doesn't get covered in poo. It's just another way of keeping it clean and safe for my customers. So then, you know, I collect them a couple of times a day. They all get wiped over with a dry cloth. If they need it, I try and handle them as little as possible, because the more you handle them, the more eggs are covered in a thing called bloom, which is like a mucus, but it actually keeps the bacteria out. So I don't want to take that off, because that's like a little protective layering for the egg inside. And then each and every one has to get candled so that I can pick up any cracks or any abnormalities in the egg. So anything that looks a little bit dodgy, if it's cracked, and it will show up quite clearly that it's cracked, I incinerate that one immediately. If it's like a little bit dirty or a little bit dodgy, that comes back in for us to eat here at the house. And then they all get packaged up into their cartons, and then every egg needs to be stamped with my unique identifier. So every egg producer in Queensland has to have their own individual stamp.
Well, like a brand.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've used. I've used our cattle brand for my egg stamp. Nice. So our eggs are branded the same as our cattle.
Nice.
Which I thought was a bit cute.
Yeah, it is. So what about the marketing side of things? Have you had to do much of that around town, or, you know, word of mouth is as good as?
How I've been selling them is direct to customers. I've cut out that middleman so that I'm not losing any of my profits. I don't have to sell them to a middleman. And also because I've only got 30, I can't guarantee supply. So I didn't want supermarkets to be relying on me and getting a bad name. And I think, you know, in town, I have built up a bit of a reputation, you know, of the local farmer, you know, an advocate for the beef industry. I've put so much about Clancella out there on the social media world and on written media and on the radio and all that. People knew who I was. So when the hens started arriving, even though I knew I was a few months off selling eggs, I started just building that little bit of hype, like, look what I've got here. In a few months, Charters Towers is going to be able to have its very own free-range eggs or pastured eggs. Calling them pastured, even though the egg industry doesn't recognise pastured as a production method, but we all still call it pastured because there is a big difference between being pastured and being free-range. So I built that, you know, started building that hype through Facebook. I didn't do much else at all. And I decided I would take standing orders. So if people wanted one carton a week, I would deliver it to them. And that, so if they wanted it every week. And then, so I think I've been going for 4 weeks now and I've had to actually stop my standing orders because that, I think, has been a really good business model. It's pre-ordered, it's limited, you have to get in quick. And then if the girls, you know, so I get around 14 cartons a week, so I've stopped my standing orders at 11. I've got 11 one week and 12 the next because some people do fortnightly orders. And I've stopped it at that. So then people have got to be watching the Clancella Downs page and they have to be on there. And I say to them, you will know Monday if there's going to be any extra cartons. So I think last week, because I had one of my standing orders where I was away, who gets two cartons a week, so I had quite a few extra. I think I had five extra cartons and they were sold within 15 minutes.
Amazing.
Because people are just watching that page. So that's that whole building the hype. It's and you know, it could be a novelty and the whole interest could back off for a while, but I think if I just keep building it, and you know, I'm looking at getting another 30 hens, so that's double, but it's still only another 30 hens. I've built that hype. Everyone wants a piece of it, and because a lot of my customers are, you know, acquaintances or good friends as well, they're really plugging me. Like, they'll get their carton for the first time and they'll, you know, get on Facebook the next morning and go, oh my god, it's local produce. Because you know, that's a big thing now too, is this whole local low food miles, supporting your local farmer. So yeah, they'll get on and then I'll have people contacting me going, well, can I get some? And I'm like, well, no, sorry, but I've got a waiting list. Do you want to go on it? And they're like, yeah, put me on your waiting list for eggs. So that's really exciting. And I think because they're so hard to obtain that it's made people really want them, you know.
So like, I guess you're already looking at doubling the amount of hens you have. Is this, you know, going to be in competition with your cattle? Are you going to go more into egg production now?
I've been told no. I'm not allowed. I've been given a cap of 200 hens. The cattle will still always make more money than the hens, unless we go really big. But one thing I've been noticing when I've been looking at other producers is that they can have a lot of hens, but so I met one the other day that has 200 hens on 2 acres, and she's got no grass left. And so that totally defeats the purpose of what I want to do. So even if we didn't have cattle, I wouldn't want my soil to be looking like that. The whole point of having the hens was to enhance the soil health. So no, I can't get too many hens.
Now, I want to go back to the social media as a marketing strategy. You've used it quite well over the years in terms of beef advocacy, as you were mentioning, and the promotion of your own brand and that sort of thing. How do you find the use of social media in the modern era as opposed to more traditional ways of advertising, such as radio, newspapers, and that sort of...
Well, I guess one of the biggest things about social media is I'm totally in control of it, or of what I put out there. I can't be in control of what people answer or what they say about me, but what I put on there. So, you know, like, you can get misquoted in the media, even if by journalists with the best intentions, you can still get misquoted. So I think that's one big thing, is that you're totally in control of it, and I don't have to chase down a journalist and make them interested in me. I can just do it, and then the journalists do follow. So you do get into more traditional, you know, it's at everyone's fingertips, that should they wish to use it. I mean, obviously there's people that don't like social media, but you know, like, most people who I'm selling to use it, so they, well, actually everyone I'm selling to at the moment uses social media. So I think that's just it. It's easy, it's quick, I'm in control, I can post every day if I want to, and I can tell the story, like little snippets to keep people entertained or interested, just little snippets of our daily or weekly life. So, and it's been giving people a really great insight about why they should be buying eggs off a producer who is accredited and things like that. So
it's education as well as promotion.
Yeah, it is. And that's probably one of my favourite things about the eggs, is because we don't have it so much with the beef, because they get sold to live export or they get sold to the meatworks. I don't have that direct line to my customer, even though they could be eating my beef, we don't know. So every Wednesday morning I show up at my customer's workplace or on their front step, bearing with them some fresh produce that I have produced on my farm 20 k's away from their home. And it gives this whole connection, and because I've loved connecting with consumers, but this is really exciting to me, because they flip their cartons over, like open straight away, and they're like, oh my God, they're so beautiful. And they're not beautiful because I only have a few, so my eggs are all different colours and they're different sizes. But that was the whole point, that food should taste beautiful, but it might not necessarily, the outside might not look so beautiful. Mm. And food isn't perfect to look at, and it's like in its raw form, it's not perfect to look at. It comes in all shapes and sizes and colours. And I have one little girl who I deliver to fortnightly, and she's about 3, and she knows me now, and she meets me at the front door screaming, eggs, it's eggs, and she's clapping her hands and she's trying to rip cartons out of your hands because she loves them. And I just think, you know, I hope that little girl is my customer for quite a long time, and she grows up and remembers that connection that she made with the farmer, because we're losing those connections, and I'm just loving being able to build it with just a few people.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, and it's interesting too, in an area like this, you know, the Charters Towers area is quite small, you sort of can generally assume people have a connectedness to their food because it is an agricultural area, but that's not necessarily the case. So it must be interesting to sort of realise that people still really crave that connection in an agricultural area.
Yeah, it's quite, and that was one of the things I first noticed with the live export crisis, is that people, even in Charters Towers, such a beef town, had lost such that connection about beef. As far as they were concerned, and there were a lot of comments, was that, oh, we don't need the beef industry, we've got mining.
Do you?
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what we were told. We've got mining and we've got education, and it's like, well, without beef you don't have education. Because of all the, you know, with all the boarding schools and Charters Towers, of the kids coming in from beef and sheep properties, and that really shocked me. And I thought, well, even in my own little hometown, and even with all this Adani mine, people are going, well, we need the mining more than we need agriculture. And it's that really worries me, is that people are really so focused on this short-term gain, but they're not looking at the long-term losses. So I just think these little, you know, get to know your local farmer and all that, things are important no matter how rural you are.
Thank you for listening to Beating Around the Bush. If you've enjoyed the content, sign up for more in iTunes or your favourite podcast app. For more information, visit the website at ruralbusinesscollective.com.au and join the tribe of small business owners and entrepreneurs making a difference in the bush.